When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Maxon.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our news and cues episode. We've got some news and some cues, so we are going to live up to the title of this episode, Ken.
Oh, yes, we got some great cues. Too bad for you, Joseph. I took notes this time. I, like, wrote stuff out. I'm so sorry. I have answers.
Well, that's great. I love that.
No, I always have answers some days. When music questions pop up, it inspires me to open up my laptop and start writing notes. So that's coming a little bit later in the show. But before we get to all that, we'll remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And a little bit later, as always, we'll have our 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us.
Yeah, and we also have another offer. It was something we were talking about that was temporary, but it has become permanent. Insight Editions, a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, is offering 35% off across their website with a special 4Center code. And you can get this discount by entering the code FC35 when you go to their website, or you can visit the website with this specific link that is insighteditions.com/discount/4Center. FC35. And there's not as many books for Inside Editions as there is for Audible, but every week we're going to recommend a different one that we are interested in. And this week I'm going to recommend Secrets of the Jedi. I love that book, so check it out with the code FC35.
Do it. Read about your favorite Star Wars characters, weapons, and vehicles. Before we get into the news, as I always do, we like to catch up with some Star Wars or life adventures. And, well, quite a week to catch up over, Joseph. How are you, friend? How are you? Always start with a good mental health check-in.
That's right. I am okay. This is a very, very strange time for our world. And as always, I do draw strength from Star Wars, some of the actual big political ideas in Star Wars, certainly. But also just the idea that, you know, we all do have to go through dark times as individuals and often as societies, and to try to take some time to quiet your mind and center yourself and focus on hope and a little bit of light in the dark time. And remember that, you know, hope and light are always there, and you can not just sit back and go, well, I hope things work out, but rather that hope is an act to spur you to a belief to spur you to action, to say, I'm not just going to hope that things are going to get better. I'm going to ask, like Leia Organa would do, what can I do to make things better? That's my way of saying I'm not doing great, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah. That's the light at the end of the day and at the end of the night is something to cling to and hold on to. And, you know, as always here in Force Center, just we want to, you know, you were saying probably more eloquent than I'm about to say off air, but just, you know, Star Wars is a great bubble to climb into sometimes. It's a great escape. We use it as that, both on the pew-pew level and the inspirational level for our own lives there. Sometimes it's just hard to not acknowledge real life as it infiltrates our lives, our brains, our hearts, our souls. Yeah.
And I think we've said it before on other episodes, but I think we're living through tumultuous times, and there's a lot in Star Wars that is political, and we're going to be discussing that in some upcoming places, because that's what there is to discuss, because that's the story that's being told. We have in the past generally tried to keep Force Center mostly free of real world politics. And we do that not because we don't have real world politics, but we know everybody kind of likes a break from the stress and tension that can come from always discussing politics. So I think in the big picture, it's still going to be, for the most part, you know, we don't need to bring up, you know, tax codes when talking about Boba Fett. But sometimes we are going to say our opinions. We recognize, just like our Star Wars opinions, not everybody agrees with our real world opinions, and we'll keep it to a minimum. But sometimes we do need to bring up the comparison to real world politics, either because what's going on in the real world is just so important that it feels bad to ignore it. It feels, you know, like it's not honorable to ignore it. And sometimes because, like, you know, we're doing our Clone Wars report and we're coming up on some episodes that are really, really political. That's what they're about. We're going to be discussing Light of the Jedi. There's some elements to that that are very much political. And, you know, at a certain point, you can't ignore that Star Wars is political. Excruciatingly so.
Sorry to interrupt you. I have found some people in my life, friends of mine, will continue to ignore that Star Wars is about politics. From the man in flannel himself, they still continue, which is fine. You can engage on the pew-pew-pew level. It's there for that. Comment ended.
Yeah, no, and I think for me, we talk about the pew-pew-pew. I mean, we just did the big deep dive episode about the thrill of Star Wars, talking about it as this great place for adventure and what do we learn in the midst of action. But, you know, especially, it's always there, but I think the prequels in particular, I think that is their power, that the prequels are a depiction of the dark side philosophy of a leader like Palpatine, who is explicitly selfish and only wants more power for himself. Okay, if that is true, then what does that person do to get that power? How does he get it? He lies explicitly in the story of Star Wars and says, hey, he whispers in the Separatists' ear, he whispers in the Jedi and the Republic's ear, and gets them to fight. They might have some legitimate disagreements, as we've talked about, but mm-hmm. you know, Padme is always the one who says, like, if we sit down, I bet we could figure this out. But that's not what Palpatine wants. He's a leader who knows only anger and lies to empower himself. And so he lies to people and stirs them up and incites them to violence and anger only in the pursuit of his own power and entirely predicated on lies. And mm-hmm. for me, at some point, I want to be gentle and I want Force Center to be a place of fun and joy. But at a certain point, like, that is the point to me mm-hmm. of Palpatine. And when I see that happening in real life, it is hard for me to not say and think that that is a part of the power of Star Wars. You know, a power of Star Wars is the joy in the hat and the action figures and the fun and the thrill and the whiz bang and the romance and the you know, a beautiful absurdity of a Chadra fan. I love all parts of Star Wars, but I don't want to ignore what a big part of it is, the lesson that the dark side, as an analogy, it can happen in the real world. It can happen to any of us. And when the dark side of greed and anger and selfishness and lies and always wanting more power for yourself intersects with politics, people are grievously hurt.
Yeah, it was, as I said off air to you, hard to watch parts of the third act of Revenge of the Sith on CNN on Wednesday. It really was for me. And look, let's be clear. You and I are the same generation. We come from slightly different paths to come to the same spot over this. Not about R's and D's in front of names, but just different paths, different upbringings, different experiences. I've been drastically changed over the last 4 or 5 years, and some of the things that used to be hardline stances for me are gone now. And a lot of it is how people treat people. And we're doing that with a thirst for power, with a penchant for believing lies or accepting lies or twisting lies in the truth. It's upset me. It's really put me at conflict with some people close to my heart. And that's why I go to Star Wars a lot more now than I used to find the light, find how to turn to the light and find what that means for me personally. I was unhappy with unhappy is a small word to use. I was disgusted. I was afraid. I was a lot of things on Wednesday and this past week. Not for all the big events I was watching on the screen, but the small events playing out in friends of mine who I just don't align with anymore. And it's been tough. It's been hard for me personally. And there's a lot of hard things going around for the nation in the last years. But we're talking about the last 4 or 5 days that since we last recorded. Anyways, I don't know what that means, but I'll say that. I'll be real. I want to be a little real, Joseph. You know, at some point, someone's going to write us an 8-paragraph letter that's saying, chastising us for having different views than them and expressing them on a podcast that we choose to create. We want everyone, Joseph and I, go out of our way to make sure everyone's at this table, because that means a lot to us as not Star Wars broadcasters trying to keep an audience, but as Star Wars broadcasters trying to cultivate a community of discussion, discourse, and comfort and support. And I feel proud of what we often do, but sometimes, yeah, you can talk real world stuff. And I've been really upset the last 4 or 5 days. It's part of Star Wars discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, when we do get people being upset, what we try to say, and I think we've said it on the air before, is that personally, I believe in freedom of speech, but I don't believe in freedom of consequences. So if you're listening and this upsets you, I respect your opinion to be upset. And I respect it if you don't want to listen to the podcast anymore, or if you, you know, don't want to follow us or support us or whatever. I respect that you have the right to choose that. I think one of the other lessons that I've got from Star Wars and from spending more time really diving into it. You talked about your personal growth, Ken. I do not think I am a perfect person or have always been perfectly aligned with the morals or values or the ideas of Star Wars. And I've been trying to be the Jedi that that we talk about, the Jedi that I like in stories. Like, okay, well, you know, that translates to your day-to-day life. And I want to be a person who stands up and says things when they're very, very important and have conviction in them. So I'm not going to stop saying things that I believe in, but I also respect somebody else's right to say, well, then I'm going to walk away.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, no. And we look, I'm not mocking anyone who takes the time to write us. Often we, Joseph and I, read every word and respond if we're met with kindness. And I want to be clear. Maybe I should back off harsh words, Joseph. Let me back off. People will write us. They will send 8 paragraphs of why they feel we're wrong, or some, and that's their right to do that. We read every word, and we want you to stay. We want you to stay. We want you to find that you can be welcomed and comforted here, unless lines are crossed, you know, on our side, your side, whatever it is. Like Joseph said, if you need to go, you need to go. But at the end of the day, it always comes down to just, I don't know. I spent 17 years telling people you do have the right to free speech, just not on this property. So if you got to go, and we'll help you go. We don't want to lose anyone. That's never been our goal. We've gone out of our way sometimes to put a sock in it.
Yeah.
And all the way around. But last week, this has been upsetting. Upsetting. Joseph, it was upsetting.
It was really, really upsetting. And I think that, I think for me, what I can take from it is, you know, hopefully really learning some of the lessons that I think Lucas and many other storytellers have tried to tell us and remind us, and that maybe I think culturally we've lost a little bit of. This is a really familiar pattern that a charismatic person would manipulate people to believe not in the nation, the republic, the group, but rather believe in them for their own selfish gain. Othering people, saying every problem that you have is somebody else's fault. You know, if there's a problem, it's because of the separatists. If there's a problem, it's because of the Jedi. So, you know, those ideas in Star Wars are not unique to Star Wars. I think they're powerful because they're tied with the sort of spiritual ideas of the Force. Mm-hmm. But I guess for me, the last thing I'll say about it is I think I get a lot of hope from Star Wars, and I do have a lot of hope for the real world that we're going to be just kind of reminded is a culture of some of these structures of how these kinds of things happen, and that we can all try to be on guard as much as possible about preventing them in the future.
Yes, yes. And hey, when possible, turn to the light, choose kindness, treat people as people, and we can just break it down small there and move on.
Yeah, exactly. Be a Padme, not a Palpatine.
It's a great t-shirt. Right. We are going to look at Star Wars news. Once again, not a lot. Coming out of the holidays, coming out of the big investor day, which was the big dump of news. Obviously not going to be a lot, but at the time of this recording, a little late breaking non-news news story. Say hello to Lucasfilm Games. That's right. It was announced on StarWars.com that the new era has begun for video games. What does this mean? EA's gone? We don't know. We'll ask those questions shortly. But you can follow Lucasfilm Games on Twitter at Lucasfilm Games, Facebook, Lucasfilm Games, if you'd like. And they will deliver breaking news and more directly to you, the fans. They also released a special sizzle reel celebrating the history of games from Lucasfilm, which I watched. It's pretty cool. A lot of Fallen Order, a lot of Old Republic, a lot of stuff we all love is there. Again, Joseph, this is exciting for a lot of people, not just for any issues with a certain company, EA, or anything about recent games, but just the history of LucasArts and a lot of the games we played coming up in this Star Wars fandom, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't get a chance to watch that video, so I need to ask you, is it all Star Wars video games that it's showing, or is it showing anything else?
It's all Star Wars games. I'm trying to think. I was like, any Indiana Jones? No. No, yeah, it's all Star Wars game. A lot of, you know, the Sim stuff, the new Batuu game, the VR game, a lot of that kind of stuff. And then Skywalker Saga stuff, which we haven't had a chance to play yet, not out. And then a lot of Fallen Order and Knights of the Old Republic, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think, you know, without being able to dive into it for myself, my main reaction is just I'm happy to see kind of the Lucasfilm brand develop, because I think there has been so much focus since Lucasfilm became a part of Disney that just focuses in on Disney. And yep, absolutely, they are one part of a much larger company. But Lucasfilm is not just Star Wars, right? It is the technology that got built up by the all the different companies under the umbrella. And it is all of the different video games and the different properties. And it excites me to see kind of Lucasfilm really asserting itself as a brand.
Yeah. And I think people have been wanting that. I mean, we mentioned again, LucasArts, just that you say that name and that elicits a lot of responses from Star Wars fans of, oh God, I remember when I bought Dark Force. Oh, TIE Fighter. Like it's part of it. And we talk about those traditions in Star Wars, whether it's Kenner figures on a shelf and the packaging we love, or just even traditions. I got a bad feeling about this. It's a Star Wars tradition we love or want to celebrate a little bit. And this is part of it too. So I'll take it as good news. Again, Joseph and I are not in the weeds on the video games in terms of companies and who makes what. And, you know, I generally know it. We'll play the games. And that's kind of where my knowledge of video games stops. So we understand this might raise bigger questions, and we'll get some of those answers when they emerge.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a great point about like the sense memory. I think my main sense memory with the LucasArts logo is I had a cough when I bought my Super Nintendo so I could play Super Empire Strikes Back. So when I see that logo, I taste a cherry cough drop in my mouth and I feel happy.
That's so weird. This is weird, but I think one of the early WWF Survivor Series pay-per-view events, if I see it now, I get a butterscotch milkshake taste. That's the day I got my braces and my mom rented some VHS tapes and I watched that while having a butterscotch milkshake.
Oh, those moments of comfort that just sort of lodge in your mind. That's amazing. That's amazing.
I hear the name the Brain Busters, the tag team with Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, I think of butterscotch. I'm like,
well, I hope they make a bunch of great Star Wars video games. And I also just really hope they make an Indiana Jones game and grumpy older Harrison Ford is willing to do the voice, because that would be amazing.
That'd be great. We'll keep you updated. And if you want to, again, follow Lucasfilm Games on Twitter and Facebook. No Instagram, no TikTok, no nothing. Just those two. All right. Hey, remember Kevin Feige's Star Wars movie? Remember that? It was just like September the last year that it was confirmed. That's another lifetime ago. It might have a writer. I think it has a writer. Here's the story about the writer. Deadline reporting this, which is why we love dealing with those kind of websites, with reputable reporters going to reputable sources and going with these exclusives. They're reporting that Michael Waldron will be scripting at least a first draft of the Kevin Feige produced Star Wars movie that, you know, still has no release date, no production date, or anything beyond that. And that's fine. That's actually normal. I actually kind of prefer movies not being locked into specific release dates 10 years out or something like that. The way of the industry. But you have to wonder. Waldron worked on the upcoming Doctor Strange sequel and is the head writer EP of the Loki series, which has not come out yet, right? We're still waiting for WandaVision. He also worked on Rick and Morty season 4 and won an Emmy for his work on that. Not necessarily specifically, but as the team. And he just signed a big overall deal with Disney. Thoughts on this, Joseph?
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting little bits of tea leaves to sort of speculate on. I think the overall deal with Disney is that's really intriguing, because is that a sign that more people are going to get these kind of deals, that producers like Kevin Feige or obviously Kathleen Kennedy are going to find people who are like, we really trust you as a writer. So you're kind of in have this overall deal so that you can pivot from doing your own project to Marvel to Star Wars. That's really intriguing to me to see if that happens more going forward. I think for kind of the MCU side of it, it's really interesting that this is not just kind of he wrote some MCU stuff. And all credit to all the various MCU writers who have all done great stuff, I think. But the Doctor Strange sequel looks like it's going to be extremely weird and extremely important to the MCU. So that's like a kind of a higher level of Feige's really, like, you know, he only has two thumbs, but somehow seven thumbs up on this guy, because that Doctor Strange sequel, I think, is really, it's seeming like it's going to be extremely important to the idea of the multiverse in MCU and expanding the MCU. And the Loki series is one that for the Disney Investor Day on the MCU side of it really excited people, because it was kind of, on one hand, it was exactly what they expected in terms of like when in Loki's timeline, but the actual what it was is just bonkers in comparison to what anybody thought. So it is a real demonstration of MCU, Kevin Feige, and apparently Michael Waldron as a writer, really being willing to say, we need to keep things fresh and surprising and, you know, obviously true to the characters, but, you know, we're not just going to do exactly what you expect. We are not coloring by numbers. And the fact that Michael Waldron is a head writer on the Loki series that is really, you know, surprising people on kind of just the DNA of what it is, makes me really intrigued by him as a writer.
That's a great insight into this. I want to hear things like that. Nothing against MCU, nothing against Feige. This is you talk about success. There's a guy who knew how to do this and did it so well. Clearly, millions upon millions of fans would agree. Bringing it into Star Wars, bringing whatever that is of MCU to Star Wars is something that I would be like, oh, okay, you know, sell me on a little bit here. And you kind of are, and how you're describing those two particular projects that are outside the box or a little bit more important. The Doctor Strange movie, I know the sequel being described as some almost like horror at times or thrill, you know, a little different feel to it. So now I'm intrigued. And what do you do with Star Wars? Because this movie probably going to be in a different, quote, different era that we hear a lot, or with characters we're not familiar with. And you know, how do you look at Star Wars in a new way? So you're bringing up some great points, Joseph, about what that could be. The tea leaves, as you say. Can we
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's one thought, though, on this particular project and other long rumored projects, including, say, a Ryan Johnson trilogy. We hear that a lot. With so much new content on the way in the next few years, content that we know is coming, is in production or being developed, how is your energy level for projects like this, these long rumored ones that seem either so far away from happening or I don't even know if they're going to happen? So when you, to make it very personal, when I saw this story, nothing against Feige, definitely nothing against Waldron, I just kind of went, tell me when it's coming.
Yeah, I think there is that for me. There's almost like this is an opportunity to be, you know, a little Jedi-like and just patience. We'll see what it is when it comes. And we've got a long wait that, yeah, there isn't a like, oh, boy, because, yeah, it's a ways down the road. And this is really an always in motion is the future time for Star Wars movies, right? I mean, yeah. It would have been a weird time for what are Star Wars movies going to be after the Skywalker saga, after they decided not to do the Star Wars story standalones anymore. It would have been a weird time for Star Wars if the entire shape of cinema hadn't, you know, been changed by a pandemic and streaming. So yeah. There's just so much in question. I think for me, one of the my honest, just like knee jerk fan reaction to partially to Rogue Squadron, but definitely to whatever Taika Waititi's making, Kevin Feige, if Ryan Johnson is still working on stuff, not only is it so far away, but there's a part of me that's just like, I'm so curious to get there and see what's the shape of it. Is it really that Patty Jenkins is going to make Rogue Squadron? And if people like it, like the MCU, then it'll be a trilogy. And then same thing with Taika Waititi, same thing with Kevin Feige. Or is there any view toward we're going to do a couple movies to test the waters and then we're going to do a saga again? Then we're going to do a trilogy again. Or if those days, you know, are gone.
None. Well, we'll find out. We'll move forward. Move forward together. Well said. Yeah, well said. And that's not happening to do it from my part on these projects. It's just kind of like J.D. Dillard or any other, you know, and again, I get how the, you know, the development process goes or things change. Ben Yevon Weiss, example of something changing dramatically. Ryan Johnson's, that seems to have just drifted away. You know, it's all good. It's all part of the process. But I just hear these stories and I'm just not as excited as I used to. Used to be. I just, yes, you're right. Patience. The information will come.
Well, and let me ask you this real quick. Yeah. Would you get, you'd be excited based on content too, right? If this was like Michael Waldron is writing the Lobot movie, then you'd be like, well, damn, now there's something to really think about and feel about.
I mean, now you're speaking my language. Yes. It is similar, you know, going to the Leslie Headland series of, hey, rumors this series might be coming. Hey, yeah, this looks like it's true. Some outlets are reporting it, and it's, you know, a different time period, female centric. And I was like, great, cool, got it. Didn't pay much attention to it until I got a title, until I got more stuff, until Leslie Headland started talking about her thoughts on Star Wars. And now it feels real. And now I feel like, cool, the car is on the racetrack. And now I can zoom around make some laps around the track of excitement because I have a finish line. And I think being in not just Force Center, but being in other shows and being in this punditry world for a while, where we're going to do a story next where it's almost kind of funny of just like, you hear the name Star Wars mentioned and now you got a news cycle on that bit. I'm slightly exhausted by that. I want to see this movie. If they did say Michael Waldron is and his ironic 2021 mustache are writing this movie with Feige that is about Revan, okay. And they don't owe me that, and they don't have to say that. That's not how it works. I'm just saying for this 5-6 years into, God, what Jedi Alliance, it was when I really started talking about it. It was 2014. You and I started working together 2014 and 2015. Like, this has been a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, I get the cycle. Tell me when the movie's up.
Get in line for excitement, because we have a lot of projects to be excited about first. Yeah.
And speaking of that, next story. Paul Bettany mentions the name Dryden Vos. It's time for a story. Here it is. There's a show out there on the internet called Jake's Takes. He's Jake and he's got some takes. He seems like a very nice chap, by the way, doing a lot of promoting, press line stuff, press junk and stuff. While promoting WandaVision, Paul Bettany was asked about which characters of his would he want to play again. It seemed very leading because it was like, what franchise characters would you want to play again? He delayed for like two. Then he said with much conviction, said it twice. I would love to mess around with Dryden Vos, which I don't know if that's double meaning, but he said it twice. I'd love to mess around with Dryden Vos. Jake got very excited, had a happy take about that. And I do too. That's it. That's the story, Joseph. Nothing beyond that. But I wanted to have this discussion. Yeah, you know, we can't deny that there was just something to Vos as a character. A lot of people, Bettany as a performer for sure. And as you know, appreciation for the so-called solo verse grows, including the Make Solo 2 Happen movement, all that kind of stuff. Do we have any interest with quote messing around with Vos, Crimson Dawn, the underworld at this point? We know we want Kira versus Maul. We talked about that, but this would be going back. Is that something that intrigues you?
Oh yes. You know, I would love a show just called messing around with Dryden Vos. That would be great. I'm really glad you pulled this. It's a funny, I didn't watch the rest of the interview, which I normally kind of try to do, because I'm very excited for WandaVision and I don't want any of the behind the scenes. I don't want any more. Every time I see one of, our friends in the pundit world, people who I really like and trust with their, you know, just, saw the first three episodes. I scroll past the tweets for now and I'll go look at them afterwards. Cause I'm very excited for that. And don't want to, know anything about it. I remember collecting the 12-issue maxi series of The Vision and Scarlet Witch about their attempts to live in suburbia. This is back in the 80s. So I'm very excited for that. It was amazing to just go to minute 8, which you kindly told me that's where I should look, and see an actor bring up Star Wars of their own volition. Because I assumed it was going to be a leading question of, would you like to play Dryden Vos again? And he's like, yeah, sure. But the fact that he brings it up, that's great. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. And then just for seeing Dryden Vos himself, I think what's appealing about him is not just like, obviously Paul Bettany's a great actor, but he's a slightly different flavor of screen villain than we've had for Star Wars. You know, he's on the gangster side, you know, he's not the dark sider, but he's not the gangster like Jabba the Hutt, who's just kind of like sitting on a throne commanding other people to do things. He himself is physically active. And he's got this great mix of, he is legitimately funny while also being utterly terrifying, and you get the sense of him as a villain. He almost has a little bit to me in a good way of like a Batman sort of villain, of like this obsessive person who is truly not entirely in control of their emotions or actions. Like, we've certainly seen like Kylo lose it a little bit, but Kylo is certainly in the tradition of more of the Maul and Palpatine and Vader of the precision anger. They have mastered their hate and weaponized it. And it just feels like Dryden Voss might kill you because you actually crossed him, or you maybe, you know, insulted his favorite singer, and he might just lose it and weep and kill you. And I think that just makes him really dynamic and interesting. And again, really darkly funny. I think he's darkly funny, and that's what makes him really compelling.
The Kolo Clawfish food offer is one of my favorite moments in Star Wars. I just something about it. It's just so, yeah, it's scary. You know, you're saying it so right. I am interested. And I love hearing when any of these actors are like, oh, yeah, I got something left for that character. Like, I'm still invested, you know. Daisy Ridley, Boyega, Oscar Isaac on a higher level, all in some way or another, said, hey, that was great, or learned a lot, started my career, or ramped up my career, not ready to go back, right? Which is very understanding for various different reasons. To hear some of the other actors, particularly those who swung through, or even Ewan McGregor saying, yeah, give me the Obi-Wan robe, it just kind of excites me as a fan. And I think there's something to what you're saying here. You said Batman villain. He reminds me sometimes a little bit of Walter Donovan, Julian Glover's character from Indiana Jones' Last Crusade, a collector of antiquities. You meet him, he's at a party with a white coat, and he's a friendly vibe. And, you know, Voss, right from the get-go, you understand he's not, you know, he's a bad guy, but he's selling that life of luxury. He's selling something else while serving a bigger master, and Walter Donovan serving the Nazis at the cost of his life. And Dryden, though Maul doesn't take it directly, he serves something bigger, and now the whole thing costs him. And that's an interesting journey, and especially for the underworld, which is so often, you know, I love Jabba's Palace. I really do. I love, you know, hanging around Mos Eisley, the dirt and grime of the literal dirt and grime of the underworld. It's like going to the Double Down Saloon in Vegas. You walk in and you might get, you know, your ass kicked and thrown out just for daring to come in there. I've been there several times, but I also like going to, a fancy casino bar. And that's what I think Dryden offers, selling that version of the underworld. And I'm intrigued by that. So, yeah, hey, let's do it. Voss. Yeah.
Why not? Go for it. Yeah. And I mean, I think another thing that's fun to think about for me is, like, not only have, you know, Daisy Ridley and John Boyega and Oscar Isaac, you know, been through all of the ups and downs of being involved with something like Star Wars, but they've done grueling shoots. And not that Paul Bettany hasn't done that for other films, but Dryden Voss is just in that office set. I mean, he basically got to do a play, So yeah. I wonder if that's also a little bit of like, it wasn't a grueling, I'm not in any way saying that he didn't put his back into it. And that fight scene is amazing. We talked about that on our recent episode about thrilling parts of Star Wars. I love that fight. But just from an actor perspective, he got to mostly be on one set, just digging in to what does his character think and feel and, you know, believe. He didn't have to do a bunch of grueling 1 second shot action scenes. So I wonder if that adds to his desire to go back and really play with who that character is.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to, you know, getting more Star Wars fights. So
yeah. Yeah.
So, hey, we'll see. We'll see if the Soloverse can grow. We'll keep you updated. All right. That is it. That's it for now. That's all we're looking at in Star Wars news. That's it. No rumors, no scoops, no nothing. We're talking just those items and juicy items enough for us there. So before we take a break and get to your questions, as always, want to recommend an audiobook for you. Joseph, this one seems like a great choice.
Yeah, this one is not surprising at all. This Thursday, our episode will come out doing a deep dive discussing this book. It's a kind of big one in the world of Star Wars. It is Light of the Jedi by Charles Sewell.
Absolutely. Check that one out. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. Help yourself and help the show in the process. All right, quick break. On the other side, your questions here on Force.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Welcome back to 4 Center. We are taking your questions from all over the galaxy, Joseph.
That's right. From the whole galaxy, we go to the planet Twitter and the planet Patreon. If you want to ask a question on Twitter right now, it is our pinned tweet, a request for questions for the main show. So if you're interested and you're on Twitter, you can go there and ask a question. And then, of course, on Patreon, I post every once in a while a request for more questions. I just did that over the weekend, and people are already coming in with some great questions. So we've got a lot of great questions coming up in coming weeks. But right now, here are our great questions right now. We go first to Twitter. Eric Ramzur says, Chapter 9 of The Mandalorian begins with a Queel quote about what it will take to be free. Cobb said he found his freedom in the armor, but was able to give it up. What do you think it will take for Din to find his own freedom from quests and helmets? Where'd you go with that, Ken?
Yeah, great question. Man, I love this one. This made me think a little deeper than I normally do on a Monday morning when we get ready to record. So I'll say this. I for whatever reason, I go to that Peter Townley Twitter thread. Peter Townley, the first co-host of the Star Wars show with Andy Gutierrez, still would appear every now and then, actor based up in the Bay Area. He had a Twitter thread, and Twitter threads, I'll be honest with you, after one or two tweets in a thread, I stop reading. I just don't have, I have books to read, not threads to read, but, his I did read and I loved it. And he talked about, and I'm paraphrasing a lot here, folks, but he talked about the transactional kind of nature of Din's kind of life view, and it's mm-hmm. all how he was raised, and it's all he knew. And I need something, you need something. So it's the only way he knew how to interact with people. And that was why, you know, you and I talk along the way about the side quests were actually the quest, because that's how he knew how to interact. And a lot of that's tied to his upbringing, of course. Can't wait to get more from the armor, or at least have more discussions about the armor. So I was kind of moved by Peter's analysis and how it tied to some personal stuff with him. And so for Din, I wonder what's going to happen now that he doesn't have a great need, right? He completed his journey. He's changed and grown, and thanks to a lot of the people he's met on the journey, which is also one of Peter's big points, his big takeaways, things we've discussed here. Din has changed not just because of himself, not even Grogu, but everyone around him. You saw that a lot this season. So now that he doesn't have that need to get much back from people, how much is he going to be willing and able to give to others? And, you know, what is that with no quests? What do you do now? I keep making the joke of Princess Bride, of Man in Black, and Mandy Patinkin's Inigo Montoya, you know, gets revenge on the six-fingered man. And what do you do now? I don't know. I don't know. Have you ever thought of piracy? I don't know. What do you do after that? And as for the helmet, personal story, I didn't drink alcohol till I was 26. I think I've mentioned that before, because reasons. and then once I tried my first sip, it's been a long, healthy relationship. Healthy, good, balanced. that might be the helmet for me. It's off. People have seen him. It'll be easier and easier each time.
Yeah, it will literally be easier for him to take a drink, because that did not look comfortable when he had to kind of heave it up halfway.
Yeah.
To sip his broth there in that great shot with the child. Yeah, I think you're saying a bunch of great things, and I agree with you. I really, I think that thread, Jeff Townley, right?
Peter Townley. Yeah, Peter Townley.
Peter Townley. My sincere apologies. Peter yeah. Townley, his apologies for the brain fart there on the first name. I think focusing on the transactional, that mm-hmm. it was really, that's the way his brain was wired because of his life and because of the armor, because that's, you know, this is the way, you know, it yeah. is to make an exchange. And I thought that was one of the best parts of season two, was even though he had made an emotional connection to Grogu in the first season and had made that big choice, you know, I think in chapter three, his big choice, the reason I love it being called the sin, is he is caught between a bunch of different ideas of honor and which is the most honorable, you know, and he kind of breaks some, but he's choosing, this is the most honorable, to not let a foundling that I found be victim to horrors of my enemy, the Empire. So even though in the first season he has discovered an emotional connection to Grogu, I love that he obsesses in the second season of like, but I got this quest from the armorer, so I don't entirely have to think for myself or feel. And that's why he is telling everyone all the time. He's not like saying, I am currently this child's adoptive father, but I know I'm not best for him. I need to find the people who can give him what he needs. He's saying, I have been quested, right? Because that's how he sees the world. And then he does start to say things like that, that are a little bit more like in that great intro scene when they're on their way to Tython of like, I can't, you know, you're really impressive. And, you know, I can't give you what you need. It starts to become emotional then. So yeah. So picking up on from what you're saying, I think this idea that how much does he realize? Well, yeah, I completed my quest, so I don't have new transactional marching orders. But I realize that the emotions I'm feeling aren't about completing a quest. They're about my relationship with this child. And then he does have a quest accidentally that he doesn't want. He owns the Darksaber, and now in theory, if Bo-Katan doesn't immediately, convince him to fight her for it. Mm-hmm. Then Bo-Katan is going to have to go, all right, well, you've got a new quest. You know, if Bo-Katan backs down, it, you know, kind of listens to her higher angels and says, I'm, you know, there's no point in us fighting. You need to go on the quest that you kind of told me you would, which is to help restore Mandalore. But Bo-Katan is in such a great place to say, like, but you can't just do it because it's your mission and you don't know what the hell to do with yourself if you don't have a mission. You have to care about this the same way you cared about this kid. And I think that seems to me a really interesting way to go with his next step in understanding who he is and who he wants to be. Like, I think he does have to confront the armorer, and I think he does have to learn how the actual history of the galaxy so he can have an actual opinion about it. And I think that will help him gain his freedom is looking around and going, all right, well, I know a lot about the galaxy, but there's a bunch of stuff that I haven't been told, or I've been told in this kind of limited, this is the way. What do I think freedom is? You know,
I think season three, the first two episodes were just him going back to Navarro and going, that protocol droid teaches him history of the galaxy.
Yeah, that would be so great. And he steals that kid's cookies.
Yeah. Just two episodes. So he's taking a master class. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, like, big picture, you know, I love that this is such a great question from Eric, because I think it is really, I think the previously on The Mandalorian, quotes are and scenes are selected very precisely, and to start the whole season two with Queel saying that about the Empire of, you know, nobody's free until we're all free, until, you know, the Empire is gone, is really, really intriguing, because it does set up these big stakes and these questions of what is Din Djarin's responsibility in that journey. I kind of feel like the big picture of this, whenever The Mandalorian ends this show, that I think it is going to be about balance, is my guess. Is I think it's going to be him saying, the armor is part of me, but it is not all of me. And I can put it down and I can pick it up. And that's freedom.
Yeah. There you go. Kind of an attachment thing. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. The Mandalorian continues to be both extremely surprising in how they tell the story, and really solid, I think, in staying true to kind of these simple, direct themes and ideas. So I'm really excited to see where it goes.
And maybe he'll have a strawberry daiquiri, which started my journey.
Oh, please. I really, really hope that the next chapter of season three is the daiquiri. Oh, the thinking that he doesn't know the joy of using a straw. Maybe he does. Anyway, you know what I mean. I'm looking forward to a lot of helmetless Din Djarin. Moving on to our next question. Great question, Eric. Our next great question comes from Gareth Bartlett. Gareth says, hearing you guys talk about when to lift a lightsaber in defense sparked a question in me. When Vader raised his blade to stop Luke striking Palps in Return of the Jedi, was that to defend Palpatine or save Luke from his own anger and journey to the dark side? Made me see that moment differently. That is great. We talked about this idea of when to pick up the blade and when to throw it down. We've talked about it a lot. Other Star Wars thinkers have as well, of course, but we talked about it a lot when we were discussing the hallway scene of Luke in The Mandalorian and what choices he was making about when to use the blade and when not. And that spurred this thought in Gareth of reexamining other moments in Star Wars to consider that. What do you think about this one, Ken?
This is an interesting, and I got to say, some a beautiful take, and I've seen it pop up some other spots and maybe in our Force Center Discord, and maybe even Gareth brought it up there. Apologize if I skipped that there, Gareth. But for me, I still don't know if it reads like that, but I'm very much okay with layering some of that in there. I think that's part of the fun. I think part of it can go back and seeing parts of Star Wars again with new light and just wondering. And Gareth is just wondering, like, hey, what could this mean? All we know about Vader, all we know about the war with Anakin, and is it starting to come out there? I still see Vader as protecting his master kind of on instinct. I think that's why Palpatine is joyous for me. It's a cackle because, oh, you thought you were going to kill me. No, you're going to have to do the thing you don't want to do, which is fight your father and kill him. I see some of that. I think I see a lot of that in there. Again, he needs a fight to happen. But regardless, follow me here too, Joseph. Regardless of Vader's true intentions in that moment, if it is, I've got a little bit of what Gareth is saying, It just kind of ends up being the result, and that's beautiful in its own way to me. Sometimes, you know, I've seen some writers say, I don't do themes. Great, but if you study your story, there's themes there, and you can't deny it. Very rocks will cry out to twist an old kind of Bible verse there. It's there, and so that's all part of what's going on, and it serves the same purpose to me.
Yeah, you're saying a lot of great things. Just a few months ago, my wife and I rewatched North by Northwest, which I hadn't seen in years, and I always like reading up on, you know, Wikipedia and other sources, and you know, the screenwriter going, "We just wrote a thriller." And almost everybody else who's ever seen North by Northwest is like, there's some ideas there, dude." Yeah, it's such a great example of, you know, sometimes things are layered in very purposefully by the creators, and sometimes they just emerge. I love the spirit of this idea that art and movies are up for interpretation, and you can look at different moments. And even if you kind of look at a moment and play with the idea and go, yeah, no, maybe, whatever, that there's joy in reexamining a moment and asking, what's going on? Can I look at this from a different perspective? You know, can I enjoy that ambiguity, that part of art that is meant for me to finish the conversation? The film says something and then I respond, you know, by thinking through it, discussing it in whatever way. I love the point that you're making, Ken, and it absolutely could be what Gareth is getting at of if Vader did not intend it, he certainly in that moment did stop Luke from just sailing that green blade through Palpatine and giving into that exact anger. Cause what is breaking Luke is the old, you have to kill in order to save the people you love. You know, you're going to lose all those people. They're all going to die, and cutting me down right now actually isn't going to stop it. So it's just going to, you know, get Luke to go through take that first step to the dark side. And Vader does stop that in that moment. But I think big picture, I do think for myself that Vader is just following the Sith plan. We talked a lot about when we did that episode about Vader and Luke's meeting on Endor and discussing what is going to happen, what isn't, that Vader, it does just seem very hopeless and broken in Return of the Jedi. And I think that Vader has to know, obviously the plan is to get Luke to lash out in anger. And once he starts down that path, once he feels the power of the dark side, he won't let it go. That's the way this goes. Vader knows that extremely well. And I think Vader has to think like, I know, of course, Palpatine wants to get a rise out of him and he wants us to fight. He wants Vader. He wants Luke to try to get vengeance on me, Vader. And I think Vader thinks, well, either Luke's going to break real quick, real easy, and maybe we'll break the rule of two and there'll be three of us. Or maybe if I get lucky, Luke will turn on Palpatine. Or probably, I think Vader knows, what Sidious probably wants is for Luke to really give into his anger and kill me.
Yeah.
And I think for whatever reasons to be explored or theorized on, Vader just feels like he is on the tracks, you know, and the mission here is to incite Luke, to get him to fight me and to get him to give in to all of his anger. And I think the reason that I feel that is Vader really keeps pushing, right? I mean, Luke tries to stop the fight, and there's that great, there is no conflict, and throwing the blade at him. And, you know, it's Vader. I think really one of the important parts of this scene is that it's Vader who finds Luke's actual weakest point. You know, it's still the same playbook of threaten the life of someone you love to get you to give in to your anger and your fear. And it's Vader who finds Leia. And you know, we concentrate so much in Return of the Jedi on his turn. But what makes his turn even more impressive is that's one of the most vile moments of Vader, of discovering he has a daughter. In his first thought is to just use her as a tool to break Luke.
Yeah. Oh, it's one of my, I mean, that whole sequence is one of my favorites, obviously, but that particular, you know, a twin sister, it's chilling in a way. What you're saying is so right. I'm just, oh, I have a daughter? Cool. Another pawn to play. Like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think ultimately, you know, that's what he's doing, but Gareth points out such a great beauty that he is blocking that first blow of hate in order to get that fight going with Luke.
Yeah, and I look, you've just said some great, insightful, deep stuff, Joseph, as you always do. I have a bullet to add here, a little button on this conversation. I have an alternate scene I'd like to see. All right, Luke ignites the green. He ignites the green. He slashes Palpatine in two while Vader watches. Luke deignites a lightsaber, looks at Vader, and says, "Necessary rage, punk," and walks away. And the ghost of Yoda and Obi-Wan clap. And as Luke goes onto the light side,
"You figured it out, Luke," says the spirit of Obi-Wan. "Kill." Yeah. Did you say punk? Necessary punk. Evil?
Yeah.
Dot, punk.
Yeah. You know, some other words I might have used, but
I look forward to Darth Punk. A great Darth name. Great question, Gareth. We're going to move on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. First up is Dylan Ratcliffe. Dylan says, if Solo 2 were to happen, what kind of themes should it play with that will influence Han to become the scoundrel we meet in episode 4? Also, what fun characters, events, ideas would you want to see in it? That's a big one. What's fun, but what gets, this really makes you think. I think the Solo film sets Han up really well in his trajectory, but the Han we meet in episode 4, whether he shoots Greedo first or at the same time, he's a cold, cool, calculating, charming, but a cold, cool, calculating character. How do you think he gets there?
This is great, Dylan. This is one of those whys. Like, you want Solo 2 to happen? Great. Why? What's the why of this? And fun characters, events, ideas. I don't know if I have all the answers in that one, but I concentrated on the first part here, Dylan. And for me, I'd like to see Han, I don't know, experience some sort of, quote, reward for his choices. To me, that means something that leads him to believe that this was the right choice. This path at the end that he takes at the end of Solo when he turns down Infus Nest's offer. And we know where that ends up. We know the choices he makes later on. And I think we've seen him get hurt, Kira stuff, therefore becoming a little detached or stoic, or, you know, friendship with Chewie becomes important. And so we understand. And I always want there to be that game of him trying hard to be something he isn't. We know he's good deep down. So I wouldn't want him to sacrifice any of that along the way. Like, I'm just like, super, super cold blood killer or something where he's like bad guy, huh? I don't need that. But if that makes sense, Joseph, I would like a false reward, something that maybe quiets his internal struggle until he's faced with it again in New Hope, where he's like, yeah, this is the life. Yeah, I lose some people. My heart gets broken. But me and my pal, we ride around the galaxy just, you know, doing cool things and being detached smugglers. And look at the credits it gets me. This Jabba guy, he says I owe him some credit. It's okay. Look at that. You know, I just upgraded the fucking, like, I, you know what I mean? And somehow that can factor into some of the story for me.
Yeah, no, I think that's a lot of great stuff. I think we went to a little bit the same place right away of being rewarded for being a hotshot smuggler and being somebody who is smart to have that philosophy of, you know, the only person I trust is Chewie, and I don't even really admit that to myself because no one else should be trusted. You're a fool if they are. And I think he could get rewarded by some really fun storytelling of seeing him be Jabba's golden boy, you know? There's a lot of Star Wars storytelling that has fun with undercutting Han, and I get that, and I think that is fun. But I also like that Han is actually, through creativity, through just bravado, he often is successful, or through being like clever. And he is for sure, for real, a great pilot. And the Falcon, even though it doesn't look like much, is for real a great, amazing ship, even if it's always about to fall apart. So I think you can get that charm of the everything looks like hell. The ship's about to fall apart. I made a lot of bad choices that got us to where we are. But then I do something amazingly cool and I win. And if he's just going into Jabba's palace and getting a round of applause, you know, getting his, you know, I would honestly love to see like Jabba reach down and, you know, ruffle Han's hair and be like, golden boy, the best, you know, I want that to be true. And I'd like to see that so he can have that kind of earn that cockiness.
Yeah. What's the Han, my boy, what's the translation? Han, my bookie. If he's truly Jabba's bookie, I want to see how he got there. And there's probably a lot of, credits, wine and women, and none of it affected him, or not even women, aliens, creatures, doesn't matter. Han can do what he wants because he's top dog, with all respect to you, Chewie. I can see that, and I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Yeah. And I really like what John Kasdan has said, that he has some ideas. We'll see if they ever, you know, make it to the screen or any other Star Wars storytelling medium, that's not the end of Han and Kira's story. And I've talked a lot about, you know, I would love to see a Kira versus Maul Disney Plus show that tells the story of that relationship, maybe with some flashbacks with Dryden Voss in them. That would be great. But I also do want to see, I think what happens in Solo is really, the movie is really successful to be like, I get it. There's no point in being close to people because they will turn on you. He doesn't understand what we in the theater get to understand, that Kira is trying to save him from ending up on the end of Maul's blade. So we see that sort of the reason that his cynicism would be solidified, but I'd love to see the rest of that relationship. And if he gets to himself to that point where he doesn't feel like, he no longer feels bad that he got separated from Kira and didn't find her, but now he just believes that caring for anybody is stupid and pointless. You know, I want to see, I think he can have a lot of fun adventures that have whiz and bang to them and Han Solo charm, but that we, the audience, can see that the lesson Han would take out of these fun adventures is that cynicism is correct, that everyone in the galaxy is out for themselves, and you are a fool if you let your guard down.
Yeah, and we know it's false for him, or at least you know, can we have the Star Wars Solo 2 equivalent of the scene in Greece where, you know, Sandy, Olivia Newton-John sees Travolta at the high school, and Danny, and then he's like, what? Because he sees his friend there. You know, I want that scene. Kira's stronger than that. You know, she doesn't need him, but I want her to be kind of like, who are you? Where was the guy on the beach? Oh, summer loving happened so fast. Where's that guy? I want the Star Wars equivalent of that, Jess.
Yes, I want Scrum Rat Lovin' to be a song.
You better shape up, because I need a smuggler. Yeah, that's all.
That is really, really great. And yeah, I guess, you know, to answer the second part of Dylan's question about, you know, what fun characters, events, ideas, definitely seeing Amy Jabba's golden boy. I'd love to see him and Chewie visit Kashyyyk. I would love to see a little bit of the kind of the classic idea that Han and Boba Fett really were at odds a bunch of different times. That would be really, really cool to me. And then I think my final thought on this, Ken, and then I'll pitch to you for any final thoughts or songs from Grease, that, you know, a part of the power of the original trilogy is what it takes to start to get Han to open up and let himself be the good guy that he is deep down, is specifically meeting Luke and Leia and seeing who they are and how they treat him and how much they care about him and how, you know, I just think it's so great that that's really the final moment of sort of completion of Han's development as a character, that Luke and Leia dropped
everything to rescue him from Jabba's palace, you know, and that's kind of what it takes for him to go, oh, you know, the galaxy is not just 100% selfish.
Yeah. And you don't have to, you know, often it's good to maybe rely on yourself, but that's not always the case. And it's always going to get you out of it. And those friends, those connections, something powerful with Star Wars. And yeah, just that great sequence of go Millennium Falcon, go, 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 go. 12 parsecs. It goes 12 parsecs. Yeah.
Well, an excellent segue into a question about songs. This came to us on Patreon from Will Dixon. Will says, I have a specific variation on the age-old score the Star Wars films with modern music game. This question may be more up Joseph's alley than Ken's, but we have addressed that. But here goes. Rescore some of the films with only Guns N' Roses songs. In most of these cases, I am timing the start of the songs with cuts or wipes from previous scenes. Will shared many fine examples. I just picked a few. Revenge of the Sith, replace Padme's ruminations with Don't Cry, which will end with the long drawn-out chord from Axel over Sidious's Force Lightning versus Mace. The Vader hallway from Rogue One, start Shackler's Revenge as he ignites his lightsaber. Shackler's Revenge is a great track from the Chinese Democracy album, which, yes, I do have that album and like it very, very much. A controversial Guns N' Roses opinion here on our Star Wars podcast. And then the other example Will shares, Anakin and Padme's dinner scene fireside romance with Estranged, which if you watched MTV in the early 90s, you are very familiar with Estranged. And then Will says, I don't want to reveal how much time I spent doing this, but I'm stopping now to leave some room for you guys, and so I don't go ahead and rescore all the films. Will gave this a lot of thought, and that makes me extremely happy. He clearly timed out the song, so he knew exactly where they fit, which is so great, and had a lot of great examples. Those were the three that really spoke to me. So, Ken, you had another band that you wanted to play this game with, right?
Yeah. One of my favorite bands of all time is The Replacements. Minnesota's own The Replacements up there. Paul Westerberg, the wonderfully grumpy front man, the late Bob Stinson, Tommy Stinson, Chris Mars on drums, and then Slim Dunlap joined them a little bit later on. I love the Mats, big Mats fam. And to me, kind of similar. In fact, Tommy Stinson, the connection, ends up playing in the kind of rebuilt Guns N' Roses a little bit later on when Buckethead was on the squad.
He did overlap briefly with Buckethead. And I believe I saw, because I did see that incarnation of Guns N' Roses when it was Axl and then a lot of other people. And I believe Tommy Stinson was there.
Yeah, it was because he started playing bass with the Mats, and he was Bob Stinson's younger brother, and he was like 14 when he joined the band. So by the time he was with Guns N' Roses, he was like in his mid-30s. He'd been around for so long. So, and he's still great solo stuff too. I love music. I love rock and roll. The rock DJ thing's my passion. You know, Joseph loves music, whether it's Guns N' Roses, Sinatra, which, by the way, Joseph, the other day I went by Sinatra's house over there in Tuca Lake. I'd never been there all my years. Gosh, good trip.
I'm going to ask you about that because I found it on Google Maps, but I don't know exactly how to physically get there. So we'll talk off air.
I can get you there. It's near our favorite restaurant, the Smokehouse, which is why it was Sinatra's favorite. Anyways, we love music. This is the question. I was like, well, now I got to tell you, well, I didn't go too down the path of syncing it up. I apologize for that. And my examples here, I used three of his moments and two of my own because I thought those were great moments and just kind of inspired me. So I'll list them here, Joseph, and we can talk, and can't wait to hear yours. So from Revenge of the Sith, going to that Padme's rumination scene, one of my favorites, I'm going with Unsatisfied from the Let It Be album. Look me in the eyes and tell me, are you satisfied? I'm not going to sing every song. Pleading, it's questions, it's, you know, is this really what you want to do? I could see Padme singing that to Anakin. Yeah. Hallway scene, the Vader Rogue One hallway scene. This isn't necessarily a one-to-one comparison, but again, from the Let It Be album, their version of Kiss's song, Black Diamond. They do just a scorching 2.5-minute version of Black Diamond. Out on the streets for, there I'm singing again. So I want that. Vader, kind of a Black Diamond in that moment. If you want to look at it from a certain point of view, it's also kind of a rough version there. The dinner scene, great scene, some Star Wars romance. I'm going with the Matt song, Who Knows, which is kind of one of their ballads. And it's always got some Westerberg heartbreak in it. So I'll do that one there. Then I'm going a couple other ones. Rey and Ben's final moments. We're going to Rise of Skywalker here. All right. He's in they're in each other's arms. She's died. Come back to life. Whatever. They smooch. Whatever. That choose that whole sequence. I'm going from the album Hootenanny, which is an early 80s when they were still very punk, but with a drum machine on the background, a little programming on this one called a song called Within Your Reach. One of the main lyrics is I could die within your reach. So I'm putting that one there. And then the final one for me, classic movie moment, the Death Star 1 trench run, Luke, Biggs, Vader, everything, the rebellion rising up. I'm going with the probably most known Matt song, which is Bastards of Young. We are the sons of no one, bastards of young. I want the rebellion taking down the empire to that song.
Oh, wow. That is great. Those are all really great choices. I shamefully only know the Replacements a little bit. Being a rock guy from Minnesota, I did not know the Replacements anywhere near as well as you do. That's awesome. Yeah, so Guns N' Roses, man, a big part of my youth, a big part of in high school and college. I played drums in a rock and roll band, and I loved playing a lot of Guns N' Roses songs. Played Don't Cry and Smells Like Teen Spirit. For some reason, they let us play it in the lunchroom, and we started a food fight. The most rock and roll I will ever get.
Yes.
There is still a chocolate milk stain on my ride, Tom, from that drum set. So this is a ton of fun from Will. Obviously, Will has heard me go on about Guns N' Roses on Four Center and my other podcast, Obsessed With. So thanks, Will. I tried to keep myself contained. This is a comedy one, but I think when Rick Ollier says the entire planet is one big city, it would be great if Paradise City just kicked in. Because, you know, there's not a lot of grass to be pretty in Coruscant, but yeah, it's still a paradise city. Night Train from Appetite for Destruction, one of my favorites. Night Train is not a literal train, but an alcohol. But still, I would put Night Train over the Convey Express chase.
Oh, yeah. Solo.
Just got a lot of great drive, and it's a very solo song about not actually being able to afford alcohol, so borrowing a girlfriend's credit card.
Hey, that's very accurate. A lot of good stuff.
That's very, very solo. One of my favorite Guns N' Roses songs. It is fast and punky and metal all at the same time and really brutal. From Use Your Illusions, part one is a song called Perfect Crime. And I think it would be just a perfect match for the recent Mandalorian scene where Boba Fett really, really kicks ass. I think you'd do that to Perfect Crime really, really well. I was trying to find the right place for it, and then I was inspired of You Could Be Mine, which I think a lot of people know well from Terminator 2. As the summer it came out, and I bought it on what were the single cassettes called? The singlets? The casingles? What the? Yeah, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that summer of Terminator 2, for people who were alive then, You Could Be Mine was a big one. I would put You Could Be Mine, the famous score, You Could Be Mine, but you're way out of line. I would put that over the Clone Wars scene where Sidious finds Maul and Savage Opress and just kicks their asses.
You would love this. Great stuff.
You Could Be Mine. And the final one almost works out timeline-wise, but, you know, you can fudge just a little bit. So 10 years between Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, and then current canon has the length of the Clone Wars at about 3 years. So it's 13 years, but you could tip it over to 14 years, and there's a great Guns N' Roses song called 14 Years that is a little bit more soulful, a little bit more honky-tonk. But putting 14 years over the Anakin and Obi-Wan lightsaber fight would be great. The chorus of 14 years is, it's been 14 years of silence. It's been 14 years of pain. It's been 14 years that are gone forever and I'll never have again. Well, I can just see Well, I can just see Obi-Wan. Yeah, it has been 14 years of pain, as Axel says it.
That's great.
14 years that are gone forever. I think that would be great. Yeah, we could go on and on with this one. This is so much fun. Thank you, Will Dixon.
Yeah, no, I mean, I haven't even got the Here Comes a Regular for the Chalmers Cantina Bar, Skyway for more Padme and Anakin Inks. No, great stuff. I love
it. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I didn't even get to the sequel trilogy. You know, I would happily put, I would put Welcome to the Jungle over any fight scene, but Welcome to the Jungle for the game that everybody plays of the Rey and Kylo fight, the Praetorian Guards in Last Jedi. Yeah. That's a good place for Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah. Great stuff. Great stuff. Well, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Stopping myself. So thank you, Will. Thank you, Dylan. Thank you, Gareth. Thank you, Eric. And thank you, everyone who sends us questions. We have a lot of really, really great ones coming up that I'm excited to discuss, Ken.
Yeah, I love it. I can always tell when you've put a call for questions because I have the Force Center Gmail up and I just see, boom, someone has posted a comment. Boom, someone has posted a comment. I'm like, here we go. We got some good questions coming. And hey, if you want to reach out with questions, you can do so by following us on Twitter. Look for that pinned tweet at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram, YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast available in a lot of spots like Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Amazon Music. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. We love your support over there. That'll get you into the Discord server, new revamped and organized Discord. You can also, for what it's worth, support us directly on Anchor as well. It just doesn't get you into the community, but you can consider that if you don't use Patreon. We have our own things as well. I always say that like I'm like, we got our own things, but it's true. follow me at Ken Napsok and follow my website. Go to my website, kennapsok.com, for information, all the things I've got there, like books, more shows, live shows forthcoming, the launch of the Good People Association coming very, very soon, end of the week. Good People GPA, follow us there too as we find the good in life, entertainment, and including movies occasionally too. So hopefully Joseph will be over there having a drink at our bar that we built by hand, talking some Star Wars with Riley and I. As far as personal plugs and donations, I'm giving this a heads up. This is something that's going to be coming a little bit later on. There's a great foundation called St. Baldrick's Foundation. One of our listeners, one of my Knapsack Files listeners, Jeff Saunders, is a nurse who works with children with cancer out in the Texas area. It's something he's involved with, and they have their big event coming up. It is in March, but want to get everyone going. You can go to stbaldricks.org for more information on what they do to help raise awareness for childhood cancers and money and funds. And there's some heart-wrenching stories, but some inspiring stories and bittersweet stories. You know, it's all part of the pains and joys of life, and Jeff is on the front lines with that stuff, and I always support his work. So that's coming, but I want to put that out there now.
That is great. That is really cool. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures, my podcast Obsessed that I'm doing with my wife here during our strange pandemic times, having a great time discussing various obsessions with my wife. We're learning a lot about each other. It's great. And got a lot of different comedy albums on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. So you can check those out. Perhaps some more online shows in the future. And, you know, the thing that I will promote is I do think that everybody should participate in our country, in our nation, in our world. And one of the ways that I think you can do that I find very helpful is there's a service called ResistBot. You just literally type it in. Their website will come up. But you can, I use text, but you can very quickly and easily communicate with your reps. And it's all guided through ResistBot. They will say, you know, who do you want to write to? They will take care of sending it. So you can literally pick up your phone. And if you feel strongly about something that's going on and you want to let your reps know, you can just text them very quickly and very easily. And it is something that that I do and that I believe in. So if you're interested in weighing in on what's going on and telling your reps how you think they should proceed or what is most important to you, you can do that with ResistBot.
That's great. Does that go to Missouri, Joseph? No, never mind. I'll look it up myself and I'll find out that answer. Thank you for that. Thank you for all of you out there for your great questions, your great support, your great understanding and compassion and empathy and kindness, and also the pew, pew, pew of it all. We love talking to all of you. We'll see you later this week. Big review discussion of the first book in the High Republic era, The Light of the Jedi, and more fun coming here on Force It.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
The secret to summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Its signature scent of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.